Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the next level of love and life.
What's good, people? It's your man, S-Pop.
Welcome to the Booty Call Show. Welcome to the Booty Call Show.
Welcome to the next level of love and life.
What's good, people? It's your man, S-Pop.
Welcome to the Booty Call Show.
When it comes to achieving, sharing breakthrough strategies and overcoming solutions for everyday people, he is a communicator of change. S.Dot's most impressive credential is that he keeps it 100 and doesn't water down the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is this refreshing forthrightness that enables him to speak with a right now relevance to people from many walks of life. His can't stop, don't stop, won't stop attitude is infectious to those who have experienced this inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach that is committed to helping those most in need succeed in love and life.
Welcome to the Booty Call Show, presented by the S.Dot Files, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio.
What's good, people? It's your man, S.Dot, back for another exciting episode of the Booty Call Show. Tonight's episode is entitled, That's Not Love. Where the fuck is the hip-hop? That's right. That's not love. Where the fuck is the hip-hop? As we begin tonight's episode, I want to preface it by saying we definitely need to put this warning out there because this program will feature explicit language describing adult situations, and it is not suitable for those who are not ready, able, or willing to deal with real talk for real people about real things. So if that is you, I encourage you, strongly encourage you, to click away if you are currently in the chat room, if you are listening in the archives. I strongly encourage you to hit pause and to discontinue listening to this program, because this program is not for you. As I always state, this program is not for everyone, and it may not be for you. On tonight's episode, we're going to be talking about the recent two-prong attack against the black family called Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. I'm going to be providing some critical insight about what I perceive to be as a pitiful display of ignorance and indifference. So if, like me, you've tuned in and said to yourself, that's not love, and then wondered to yourself, where the fuck is the hip-hop? You're not by yourself. I, too, tuned in. I, too, found myself saying, these people are dysfunctional. That's not love. And I also found myself saying, where the fuck is the hip-hop? So as we get things started, because, you know, we, after watching that show, I definitely feel like, you know, I need some damn love. Hip-hop needs some damn love. The hip-hop generation needs some damn love, you know, because we are being assaulted, people. It is an extreme assault that we are having to endure these days as the so-called hip-hop generation, looking at the nonsense that is currently being put out there before us. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back in a minute. The call-in number is area code 347-308-8527. Once again, the call-in number is area code 347-308-8527. For those of you who may be in the chat room, thank you guys for clicking by. I'm having a bit of a technical difficulty not being able to see the chat room on my computer. So thank you guys who are clicking by and are in the chat room. Continue to converse amongst yourselves. As always, let's keep it about black love. And if you have something to say that you want to weigh in, call in 347-308-8527. Black love, people.
When I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall, and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. For the first time in my life, I see I need love. There I was, giggling about the games that I had played with many hearts, and I'm not saying no names. Then the thought occurred, teardrops made my eyes blurred, cause I said to myself, look what you've done to her. I can feel it inside, I can't explain how it feels. All I know is that I'm never dishing up the raw deal, playing make-believe, pretending that I'm true. Holding in my laugh as I say that I love you, saying I'm more, kissing you on the ear, whispering I love you and I'll always be here. Although I often reminisce, I can't believe that I found a desire for true love floating around inside my soul, because my soul is cold. One half of me deserves to be this way till I'm old, but the other half needs affection and joy, and the warmth that is created by a girl and a boy. I need love.
Got played. Don't be a lame. S-Dot is now coaching on the game. Get the Getting Over It Guide, Exposing the Game. Learn how to stop playing yourself on RTK Communications. Don't hate the player. Learn to peep game. Exposing the Game, the first volume of the 7-series Get Your Mind Right, from inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach, S-Dot Jones.
What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot, back for another episode of the Booty Call Show. And tonight's episode is entitled, That's Not Love, and Where the Fuck is the Hip Hop? Tonight's show, we're going to be taking a look at the second season of Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, which is a spinoff of the first season, Love and Hip Hop, which was filmed in New York. And this particular show caught my attention on Twitter. As you all know, I'm not a big TV person. I didn't have a television for 5 years while I was getting my mind right. As I came into my relationship with my wife, she had a television, but she wasn't a big television watcher either. And now that we're married, we have a television at home, but we don't watch television too often. Once in a while, we'll turn on the television, see what's going on, and but for the most part, television is a DVD player for us. We may watch DVDs. But I'm on Twitter. For those of you on Twitter, you can follow me, twitter.com/ the S-Dot Files. That's THESDOTFILES, the S-Dot Files on Twitter. And on Twitter, just checking what's been trending in the last few weeks, what came up on my radar was this show, Love and Hip Hop. Watching this show the other night, because I saw the second episode, I saw snippets of it, and then I went online when I was in the office and got like a recap of it, and was like, oh my God, this is crazy. So when the third episode came on the other day, I happened to be on Twitter, didn't even think about it, and I saw people tweeting about it. So I turned on the television, my wife and I, and we got quite a surprise. You know, my take on it is that, you know, that's not love. When I look at that show, when I look at those individuals, I don't see loving relationships. I see conflict. I see chaos. And I see that someone is trying to hoodwink us and tell us that this is what our relationships are supposed to be about. More specifically, what black relationships are supposed to be about. Then they're calling it love and hip hop. And when I look at the show, I see a bunch of R&B singers or R&B-laced music, but I don't see any hip-hop artists or those who are indicative of hip-hop music. I see individuals who are capitalizing off of hip-hop as a genre in order to make money, but I don't see individuals who are embracing hip-hop as a culture, meaning graffiti, that aspect of writing, meaning dance, the aspect of rock, pop rocking, break dancing, you know, meaning lyrics, the aspect of rapping, meaning DJing, the aspect of turntablism, and meaning entrepreneurship. The only aspect that I see these individuals doing is entrepreneurship, raping the genre of rap music, but calling it hip-hop. And I have a problem with that. As someone who grew up in hip-hop, who grew up in the capital and the birthplace of hip-hop, to see individuals calling this show hip-hop. And I don't have a problem with it because the show this season isn't based in Atlanta, because hip-hop is a worldwide culture. It is far exceeded its initial roots in New York City. It has branched out in taking hold in other places, California, Atlanta, you know, the Carolinas, Florida, beyond the USA. There are individuals who espouse and embrace hip-hop as a culture and as a cultural medium or consciousness that began because of young individuals recognizing that the adults were no longer listening to and respecting their voice in so-called society. So as a youth culture, young people came together and didn't have a lot of resources. They were taking music instruction out of a lot of the classes. They were taking away a lot of opportunities for young people to get together and socialize, and young people took nothing and made something. Took those old records from their parents and used their ingenuity to learn how to hook up turntables to a power line in the street, and had these makeshift parties in basements and public parks and recreational centers. And, you know, and it was a beautiful thing to grow up in New York during the 70s and 80s and see this explosion of hip-hop culture and to see what they are calling hip-hop today on TV is a mockery, and it is disgusting. And when I look at this show and when I listen to this show, I had to ask myself, where the fuck was the hip-hop, you know? That's what I was wondering as I was flipping through the channels a few nights ago with my wife. You know, we caught the third episode of Love and Hip Hop, and we decided to see for ourselves what everyone was tweeting about. So I immediately took out a notepad to take some notes, as is my practice whenever I watch television, as I tell any individual who is trying to become so-called conscious or less confused or better informed. I think that it only makes sense throughout your day that you get into the habit and the practice of taking notes, becoming an observer of your environment, your interactions, so that when you're away from certain individuals and you have a time, have time to reflect and decompress, that you can look back over those notes and evaluate what the hell is going on in your life. So this is what I did. I took some notes so, you know, that I could later reexamine the content after I disengage from viewing the program, because oftentimes when you're in the midst of viewing a program, because it is entertainment, and notice the term, entertainment, enter to contain you, not to educate you, or edutainment, as KRS-One would have said, meaning edify you or educate you through entertainment. It's just entertainment to just distract you from doing what you need to do. So a conscious observer recognizes taking notes is an essential tool for vetting information critically and objectively. And as I did that, I came to the realization that Love and Hip Hop Atlanta is a full frontal attack on the black family. It is yet another disinformation tool, and the purpose is to redefine what we know to be love and replace it with lust, and to alter hip-hop as a consciousness paradigm with what I call shit-hop. So instead of love and hip-hop, what we have is lust and shit hop. On this show, each of the couplings that you see are dysfunctional tug of wars, not between men, but between males, pretending to be men, and not between women, but between females, believing they are women. And we, as viewers, confuse the genders of these role players with the responsibilities of conduct required for woman and manhood. So a lot of us look at this show and we believe, oh, this is what love is about.
for those of us who identify ourselves as members of the hip-hop generation. And for young people, and more specifically those who classify themselves as 80s babies, this is a very, very dangerous propaganda tool. Young people who are coming of age in their teens and their 20s right now, early 30s, this show is their frame of reference for what love is supposed to be and what hip-hop is supposed to be. Speaking of hip-hop, let's give you all a lesson, youngins, and you who believe that you're elders, but just because you're old doesn't make you an elder. Remember, being an elder is an honor, something that those in your community and family designate you to be based on what you do, not because you are biologically a certain age that qualifies you to be an elder. You're just an older. That being said, let's listen to the Blastmaster KRS-One. We'll be back in a minute. Holla.
You know, that's why, man, I be telling you all the time, man, you know, love, that word love is a very serious thing, and if you don't watch out, I tell you that. Because a lot of people out here, they say, I love my car, or I love my chain, or I'm just in love with that girl over there. So for all the people out there that fall in love with material items, we're going to bump the beat a little something like this. I'm in junior high with a B-plus grade. At the end of the day, I don't hit the arcade. I walk from school to my mom's apartment. I got to tell the suckers every day, don't start it. Cause where I'm at, if you're soft, you're lost. To stay on course means to roll with force. A boy named Rob is chilling in a Benz in front of my building with the rest of his friends. I give him a pound, oh, I mean, I shake his hand. He's a neighborhood drug dealer, my man. I go upstairs and hug my mother, kiss my sister and punch my brother. I sit down on my bed to watch some TV. Do my ears deceive me? Nope, that's the fourth time this week. Another fast brother shot dead in the street. The very next day while I'm off the class, my mom go to work cold busting her ass. My sister's cute but she got no gear. I got three pairs of pants with my brother I share. So there in school, see I'm made a fool. With one and a half pair of pants, you ain't cool. But there's no dollars for nothing else. I got beans, rice, and bread on my shelf. Every day I see my mother struggling. Now it's time, I've got to do something. I look for work, I get dissed like a jerk. I do odd jobs and come home like a slob. So here comes Rob, his goal is shimmery. He gives me $200 for a quick delivery. I do it once, I do it twice. Now this steak with the beans and rice. My mother's nervous, but she knows the deal. My sister's gear now has sex appeal. My brother's my partner, and we're getting paper. 3 months later, we run our own caper. My family's happy, everything is new. Now tell me, what the fuck am I supposed to do? That's why. You fall in love with your chain. You fall in love with your car. Love is gonna sneak right up and snuff you from behind. So I want you to check the story out as we go down the line. Money's flowing, everything is fine. Got myself a Uzi and my brother a 9. Business is booming, everything is cool. I pull about a G a week, fuck school. A year goes by and I begin to grow. Not in hype, but juicing cash flow. I kick up my feet and begin to watch TV. Cause now I got other people working for me. I got a 55-inch television, you know. And every once in a while I hear just say no. Or the other commercial I love is when they say this is your brain on drugs. I pick up my remote control and just turn. Cause with that bullshit, I'm not concerned. See, me and my brother jump in the BM. Driving around our territory again. I stop at the light like a superstar. And automatic weapons go spray my car. I hit the accelerator scared as shit. And drove one block to find my brother was hit. He wasn't dead, but the blood was pouring. And all I could think about was warring. Later I found that it was Rob and his crew. Now tell me, what the fuck am I supposed to do?
Are you ready to get your mind right?
for who you are. It's time to get our minds right. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. Caller number is area code 347-308-8527. Once again, the caller number is area code 347-308-8527. I want you guys to call in and let me know what you think about the current season of Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. Give me some feedback. Let me know what do you think of the show. Some feedback on what you've seen so far, the first three episodes. For those of you who may have been following season one, give me some feedback on what you thought of season one. And let's have a dialogue about love and hip-hop and this so-called representation of our generation and the paradigm of love. So first and foremost, I want to talk about the individuals who are members of this particular cast. You know, we've got Erica Dixon, who she's involved with Little Scrappy, who is a rapper from Atlanta. Little Scrappy, he had out a couple of joints a few years ago. It's not particularly got out any music right now that many folks would know. I mean, I think the last thing he did was he's got a new album called The Grustle, which is, I guess, a combination of the grind and the hustle. And that came out, and it's supposed to come out about a week or two ago, actually on June 26th. Before that, he had out Prince of the South, which was about 2 years ago. Then his first album, I believe, was Bred to Die, Born to Live in 2006. So Little Scrappy, his government name being Daryl Kevin Richardson II. He's an 80s baby, born in 1984. And, you know, he hails from ATL originally. And most folks know him through his affiliation with Little John. He and, you know, the whole Trillville movement, you know, BME Recordings, when he came on the scene, you know, he's been affiliated with labels such as like Cashville South, you know, G-Unit Records South, you know. He's made appearances with artists like Young Jock, 36 Mafia, of course, Lil Jon, Young Buck, 50 Cent, Olivia, Young Dro, you know, a couple of folks. He's pretty much done his thing in the Dirty South and established himself as a moderately successful artist back in the mid, well, you know, about 6 years ago. But it's been a minute since he's had a hit of notoriety and acclaim that has sold a lot of copies. So for the most part, he's an individual that is no longer considered what you would call a first-tier artist. He's someone who is struggling to remain relevant in an industry and in a genre that rapidly chews up and spits out individuals on a consistent basis. So that's Little Scrappy, who is involved with the other cast member, Erica Dixon, and the two of them have a child together. They have had an on-again, off-again relationship for a number of years. A number of years ago, they parted ways when little Scrappy got into a relationship with a dancer by the name of Diamond, and parted ways with Erica over Diamond, and Diamond then turned around and pretty much broke up with him. And he didn't know. He found out over Twitter, because she started hanging out with Soulja Boy.
So, you know, it's a pretty interesting dynamic of how that happened. Then him and Erica kind of reconcile, and they've been trying to work their situation out since. And it's been pretty hectic. Now, another cast member is Kay Michelle. Many of you may remember her. She was an artist that was signed to Jive a number of years ago. I knew a number of individuals who were involved behind the scenes on her project, and she kind of imploded, you know. Many people thought she was going to do big things, but her project stalled out. The individual who she was romantically linked to, who was managing her or producing her at the time, pretty much ran through and exhausted her budget. And when it came time to deliver an album, there was no money to deliver the album. She spazzed out as a result, found herself blacklisted in the industry. So now she's a talented young lady who's trying to get herself put back on. So that's the role that she plays. Then you have a young lady by the name of Carly Red, who is a up-and-coming singer. And she's, at this point, just trying to get put on, trying to put together her album project, and interested in working with as many hit makers as possible so that she can have a viable, commercially viable project. Then you have Rashida, who many of you may be familiar with. She's an artist from the ATL who's had a number of nominally successful songs out over the years. She's an independent artist, does well regionally, particularly in the South. She is classified as a rapper. She makes a cross section between rap and R&B lace type of music. And then you have, you've got Mimi, who is the girlfriend, long-term girlfriend of Stevie J. And Mimi has a very interesting history in that she has been involved in or traveling in the circles of music, more specifically hip-hop, for a number of years. Was pretty much a party person, a hangout person years ago, as a lot of people were, you know, in their 20s and so forth, and has been linked to several individuals in the past, most notably Ja Rule, who, you know, supposedly they had some dealings back in the days prior to her situation with Stevie, and some have suggested even during her situation with Stevie. Then you have Jocelyn Hernandez, who is a current up-and-coming artist who formerly was a stripper, who is currently signed to Stevie J, who represents her as her manager and her producer, and they have a very interesting sort of entanglement, and it has been widely speculated that, you know, their relationship was more than just manager, producer, you know, and their meeting has been fairly recent. You know, it goes back less than a year, in fact, probably back to about December. So it's a fairly new situation, but quite a bit has happened as a result of it. Now, one of the big players in this whole situation is Stevie J. And Stevie J is a three-time Grammy-winning producer. Worked for a number of years as one of the hitmen. P. Diddy's squad of producers on Bad Boy produced a number of hits, among them, you know, songs for like 112, you know, Only You, see, More Money, More Problems, Nasty Boys, Notorious Thugs, number of joints on, you know, Bad Boy artists. In fact, let's just apologize. Apparently, I got disconnected. So, to take a brief moment to pause, I want to play a track from Stevie J. We'll be back in a minute. The caller number is area code 347-308-8527. Once again, the caller number is area code 347-308-8527. It's your man, S-Dot. We'll be back in a minute.
Baby, 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 baby.
Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Niggas in my faction don't like asking questions, strictly gun testing, coke measuring, giving pleasure in the Benzito, hitting fannies, spending chips at Manny's. Hope you creeps got receipts. My peeps get dirty like cleats. Run up in your crib, wrap you in your polo sheets. Six up in your wig piece, this nigga deceased. Why? May you rest in peace with my sycamore style. More sicker than yours, 4-4 and 54 draws. As my pilot, stairs my lair. Yes, my dear, shit's official. Only the feds I fear. Here's a tissue, stop your blood clot crying. The kid's the dog, everybody dying, no lying. So don't you get suspicious. I'm big, dangerous, you're just a little vicious. As I leave my competition, respirator style. Climb the ladder to success, escalator style. Hold y'all, breath I told y'all. Death controls y'all, big don't fold y'all. I spit phrases that'll thrill you. You're nobody till somebody kills you.
You're nobody till somebody kills you.
Casino, I'm the hip hop version of Nicki Tarantino. Ask Nino, he know. Green with envy, the green tempts me to make the rich the enemy and take their cheese, take their spot, take their keys. Make my faculty live happily ever after in laughter. Ha, never seen Cristal pour faster until the bastards, knucklehead squeeze let. Three of my dead, nothing left to do but tear they ass to shreds, leave them in bloodshed. Incidents like this, I take trips. Lay up in Miami with Tamika and Tammy. So Creole, see your bitches I met on tour. Push a peach, legend, cool, gold teeth galore. Told me meet them in the future later. They'll take me shopping, buy me lavender and fuchsia gators. Introduce me to player haters and heavy waiters. Rich bitch shit, drinking Cristal till they piss the shit. Thorough bitches, adapt to any borough bitches. Be in spots where there were no bitches, you feel me? Reminisce on dead friends too. You're nobody till somebody kills you.
You're nobody till somebody kills you.
I don't want to die.
the S.Files social media network on Facebook, MySpace, iMeme, and YouTube. Just click by these social networks and / the S.Files. And don't forget to follow S. Twitty in the City on Twitter at twitter.com/ the S.Files.
Okay, man, S.Dot, we're back. Again, I apologize for the disconnection. I don't know how much you guys heard or not. So if you're in the chat room or you're listening live, give me a call, 347-308-8527. Once again, 347-308-8527. We need to take this time to delve into the actual show itself. So many of you who are following the show know that there's a very interesting dynamic, specifically with the individuals who are males in the show. There are three male prominent characters, Stevie J, Little Scrappy, and one other individual who is a player in the show is Kirk, and he is the husband of Rashida, and he is the CEO of their independent label. And each of these three male characters personifies, as usual, a black stereotype, very dysfunctional stereotype. But one individual I wanted to begin with was Little Scrappy and his relationship with not just his mother, but all the females in his life. Back in 2008, he was arrested, followed an altercation with his sister's boyfriend. He's been in a number of situations in which he has been involved in physical violence, and it's typically usually related to the females in his life. In this particular show, recently on the last episode, Erica approached him and told him that Stevie J and her had some words at a club and inflamed the situation to such a degree that he then said that whenever he saw Stevie J, he was going to lay paws on him, meaning get into an altercation with him. And this seemed to delight Erica, who seems to derive some sort of a dysfunctional joy from him engaging in these sorts of displays of non-constructive emotionalism. Then in addition, Scrappy was raised by Mama D, his mother, who is admittedly a pimp, someone who made her profession or her income as a result of having women sell their bodies. So much so that on an earlier episode, she mentioned that she should have turned out Diamond, who is the woman who broke up with Scrappy, her son, saying that she should have turned her into a prostitute for what she did to her son. Very dysfunctional dynamic. I want you to listen in when Little Scrappy goes to Mama D's house to get some motherly advice. Let's take a listen.
Mom Dukes. After I went to holler at Erica to tell her how I felt, you know, I went to go holler at Mom Dukes.
How you doing?
I'm good. That's the person you need to go to. She gonna keep it straight with you.
What's up, son?
Just found me a little spizz out.
What?
New place.
Really?
Yup. Made for a bachelor.
What's going on with you and Erica?
Man, we good, man, but I just gotta get up out of there, man. I gotta go do my thing, you know. I'm trying to, you know, just get some understanding. I don't understand it. I don't understand how, you feel me, like, you in the same house, you talk all that, you know, that love and double jump, but you can't do it.
Yeah, it's not in you. But it goes back to saying, she can't show you something that's not in her.
You know, Erica, my baby mom and all, I love her. I mess with her the whole 100,000 yards, man, if they was, but, you know, that don't mean you got to be with somebody.
Are you going to still see her, or are you just going to start dating other women? Cause
I'm going to try to. I'm going
to
try to.
I know you.
I'm going to try to.
Yeah, well,
I'm
just
try
face,
to. I'm going
to
try to.
Run it.
I'm going to try to.
Yeah, you're going to do some stuff.
No, I'm going to try to.
Yeah.
You feel me? But, you know, if it don't work, you know, that way I ain't got to move. She ain't got to move. You got your own stuff.
Yeah.
I got my own stuff.
Well, you know, she came over recently, and I told her, you know, honestly, you got to step your A game up, because if you don't, you're going to lose it. And I know my son. You know what I'm saying? He's like me. If we're not feeling it, we cutting out. Because like, you ain't finna make me feel unloved.
Yeah, nah. It ain't even unloved. It's just like, you know what I'm saying? I'd rather kick it with a million chicks and get that from a million chicks than not get that from one.
As long as he doesn't drag in another woman like Diamond, mama down with that. I'd rather for my son to be with, sleep with, to do whoever he wants than for one woman not to give him the one thing he asked for.
Have you hired movers yet?
I was gonna ask you to do that.
Wow, I'll do it.
I don't do that.
I'll get it together.
I don't do that. I know,
I'm always doing it.
I don't never do that.
When does that stop?
So as you can see, a little scrappy, like a lot of dysfunctional males who grow up in households raised by dysfunctional females, has a warped sense of what a relationship could or should be. His mother says to him that Erica can't give what she doesn't have, meaning the ability to love a man, because Erica grew up in a household without her father figure present. However, it's contradictory in the sense that, well, what could Scrappy Butter teach him about a functional relationship when he grew up? She was, for the most part, exploiting, dominating, and subjugating women for economic resources. But that just seems to be overlooked. And oftentimes, many dysfunctional males will overlook many of the flaws and the shortcomings in their maternal figures in their life, because those are the individuals who sustain them on the day-to-day basis. And few of us can ever get to a point where we can objectively, critically look at and examine the roots of our family tree and begin to say, this shit is dysfunctional. This shit isn't healthy. You know, moms is dysfunctional, pops is dysfunctional, whomever is dysfunctional, and I need to move away from this. Start creating a different paradigm of existence for myself. And those who don't develop a healthy paradigm, they take on a warped sense of what they believe, what they perceive love to be. And because they're dysfunctional, it's like, for instance, an individual who self-identifies themselves as a nigger. Now, we can argue back and forth about grammar, usage, context of the terminology nigger. Some folks will say, oh, I mean Ethiopian king. Some folks will say all these different things. But let's just keep it 100. When an individual I'm talking about that identifies themselves as a nigger, I'm talking about the same nigger when people say niggers ain't shit, niggers ain't going to do this, niggers ain't going to do that. That's the nigger that I'm talking about. And that sort of nigger needs a co-defendant or a rider. And his rider has to be his bitch. So a nigger needs a bitch in order to exist. If a nigger is with a woman, they're not equally yoked. Just as if a bitch is with a man, they're not equally yoked. There's going to be conflict. Folks often hear unequally yoked and put it in a faith perspective.
But it's also in a mindset perspective. If you are at a point in your life where you have graduated beyond that particular paradigm of self-identification, of referring to yourself as a nigger or a bitch, for whatever reason that you refer to yourself as that, and you still continue to reside in relations with those who self-identify themselves as a nigger or a bitch, for whatever reason, there is going to be a disconnect at some point. And those who have the nigger-bitch dynamic in their relationship appears to be working for them for as long as that's the level in which they're on. But let's listen to how that kind of plays out in hip-hop. We'll be back in a minute.
Let me ask you a question, y'all. Yo, would you kill for me?
The act of making love.
You
so
with you, bitch.
When I met you, I admit my first thoughts was a trick. You look so good, huh? I suck on your daddy's dick. Yeah. I never felt that way in my life. It didn't take long before I made you my wife. Got no rings and shit, just my main squeeze. Coming to the crib, even had a set of keys. During the day, you helped me bag up my nickels. In the process, I admit, I tricked a little. But you was my bitch, the one that never snitched. Tell me when I'm broke or when I'm filthy fucking rich. And I admit, when the time is right, the wine is right, I treat you right. You talk slick, I beat you right.
But you know you love it, don't you?
My C-Lo, I want a bitch that like to play C-Lo and crack, back and gas in a coach bag, steaming dime bags. A real bitch is all I want, all I ever had. With a box just as strong as me, toting guns just as long as me. The bitch belongs with me. Any plans with another bitch, my bitch is solid. One day she used my toothbrush to clean the toilet. Throwing my clothes out the window, so when the wind blows, I see my polos and Jimbos. Hide my car keys so I can't leave. A real slick bitch, keep a trick up her sleeve. And if I deceive, she won't take it lightly. She'll invite me politely to fight G. And then we lie together, cry together. I swear to God, I hope we fucking die together.
Just me and my bitch, just me and my bitch, ever, bitch, ever, bitch, bitch,
just me and my bitch, just me and my bitch, just me and my bitch,
Got buzz? Advertise your brand and spread your message on the S.Dot Files social media network, where real people connect and reflect on love and life every day. To find out more, email the Dot Team at the S.Dot Files@gmail.com.
What's good, people? It's your man, S.Dot, back again. Got a number of callers on the switchboard. We're going to start picking up calls right now. We want to discuss Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. Your feedback on the show. We're going to go to our first caller. And once again, the caller number is 347-308-8527. Once again, the caller number is area code 347-308-8527. If you have a question or comment, press number 1 on the phone so that I know that your hand is raised. We're going to go to our caller from the 803 area code. Caller from the 803, what's your name, question or comment? Caller from the 803?
Yes, it's Thomas in Charlotte.
What's good, Thomas? What's going on, bro?
What's going on? Long time no hear, fam. Yeah, you know, it's very striking to see this series be put on TV. Mona Scott Young, the executive producer of the show, you know, she was responding to the tweets and rants that she's gotten about the show, and she's like, you know, her indignant response was turn off the damn TV. And that's what it would take, you know, to get something like this on TV. If the advertising dollars dry up, then the show wouldn't exist. But guess what? For every person who says they don't like drama, they don't like seeing it as a conflict, these are the same people who will watch the show. I mean, I had to get on my ex about this. She's, you know, she talks about how we need to do this and we need to do that. And I said, well, you watch the show. Well, yeah, it's entertaining, yeah, but it's a fictionalized account of someone's real life or an over-dramatized account of someone's real life. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, that's the case. Live your own life. You know, I mean, you know, it's just unfortunate. It's a travesty. It's just horrible, you know, to see. And the sad part about it is, like, you know, that whole situation that's playing out with the guy who's on there, you know. That, I mean, if he's been with her for 15 years, I mean, obviously, you know, she was around when he was dating Eve, right, which, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not like she doesn't know what he's about or what he's doing. So it's crazy. I just don't know. I mean, you know, the way this, you know, this system works is, if there was a demand for it, it wouldn't exist.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I observed in watching the series is that, you know, I noticed a lot of individuals who were attacking the character of Jocelyn, who is the one that's involved with Stevie J. She's supposedly his artist, quote unquote. And we come to find out that not only is she his artist, he's sleeping with her. And then it was recently revealed that she now proclaims that she's pregnant and carrying his child. And, you know, what's sad commentary that I'm hearing, particularly from a lot of young females, is that they're attacking her. They're attacking her physical attributes. I've heard people talk about whether they consider her attractive or not, whether she's a gold digger or not. But all of this venom, and no one seems to focus on the fact that Stevie J, for all intents and purposes, presents himself as a man in a committed relationship. And no one seems to want to address or look at and examine that dysfunctional aspect of things. I've heard people make excuses like, well, you know, brother's going to be a brother, dude's going to do what he's going to do, and things of this nature. But I think that it's a sad commentary that the message that's being transmitted to younger females who are impressionable, because when they hear a show with a title that says love, which so many of our people are starved for, and hip-hop, which resonates as the soundtrack of the lives of so many of our people, and specifically young people, they're going to gravitate to it like flies to shit. And so many of these young people are engaged in watching this show, and this show, for the most part, is telling them that it is reality TV, meaning it's real, so therefore it becomes a paradigm which many of them turn around and emulate. And we know that so many of our young sisters, unfortunately, are turning to stripping, and those who aren't strippers want to be video vixens, and those who don't want to be video vixens just want to go and get some ass shots so that they can get some attention from someone. And this is just furthering that sort of mindset. And, you know, and I don't think that it's constructive to beat up on any of these individuals. I think that it's more constructive to look at how dysfunctional the ramifications are going to be from the messaging from this particular show.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, there was, you know, like I said, I think one of the the more disturbing aspects of the show is how the woman that is in his life, likewise, she may rant and rave and everything. Basically, you know, her if you really peel the layers of the onion back, like, you know, she knows she's probably well taken care of financially, and that's really what the bottom line is. I think she knows that, you know, I mean, yes, she could put, you know, papers on him and make him pay child support and all that stuff, you know, but she lives pretty comfortably. And so, you know, and there are many women that, you know, that's acceptable for them, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, because, you know, and I was saying that to a young lady, is like, well, so this is, what about him? And I was like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right, but, you know, she's accepting. I mean, she obviously knows his track record. She even said that. I know what I'm dealing with for him. You know, I mean, she's not foolish. She lives probably a pretty decent lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry, bro.
No problem. And so, you know, I mean, it's in her mind, it's a trade-off. I know many women who believe that way. You know, that, you know, it's a trade-off, and, you know, either, you know, they could be dealing with a so-called, you know, regular dude, and be barely making it, and potentially still have to stay, you know, dealing with the same problem, especially in a city like Atlanta, where you got a lot of open homosexuality. The numbers are just not in the women's favor in a lot of cases. So, you know, to her standpoint is, well, I could deal with a so-called regular dude and still have to worry about him cheating on me and be struggling, or I could deal with this dude that my material needs are met and just rock with it and roll with the punches, you know?
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting point, because, you know, most people who listen to the show know that I spent a number of years working behind the scenes of the entertainment industry. I've had some interactions with Stevie J, a lot of the Bad Boy roster, and so forth for a number of years. And whether it was from me throwing parties when I was a magazine editor, just, you know, even when I produced music and I managed artists, you know, so I've seen a lot of this sort of lifestyle up close and personal. So I'm usually trying to caution young people who want to get involved in entertainment, and oftentimes they want to get involved for the most superficial reasons. I mean, everyone, I think, wants to be economically viable. You know, everyone wants to be what they consider to be prosperous, having resources. But many of our young people are attention starved and love the prize. So many of them want to get involved with entertainment because they think that they're going to have a level of adoration. I mean, there are countless young people that I know who, you know, they only focus on trying to make music and make music so that they can upload it to YouTube, hopefully put it on iTunes. Many of them don't become successful other than a lot of people viewing their YouTube clip. But for many of them, just the adoration of having a million people view their video on YouTube is enough affirmation for them. And this generation is so, we talk about them having attention deficit disorder, and they also have a deficit disorder in the sense that they want attention so bad that many of them are willing to do any and everything, from pulling their pants down to showing their ass while they're walking down the street, to getting ass injections and butt injections just so that people can pay attention to them. You know, this generation is really attention deprived, and a lot of young females particularly are willing to place themselves in harm's way if
they meet a dude who appears to have some resources or access to resources, they're willing to say, well, nobody has claim to a man. A man's going to do what a man's going to do, whatever, whatever. So, you know, it's whatever, you know. As long as he buys me a Birkin bag or he takes me this place or gets me into this club, I'm going to be good with it. And I think that that's the example that's being shown with the Mimi character in this particular show, because it is well known, you know, that she has a bit, and I'm not saying this to kick any dirt on her as an individual, because that is someone's mother. But, you know, we all have a past. I definitely do. But, you know, she has a history of being a person that was an entourage type of person, seeking that sort of attention. And Stevie J is, for the most part, an attention whore. You know, he's a producer, which basically means you make your money behind the scenes. But yet and still, he's doing this show, and he's done a lot of moves throughout his career for the purpose of increasing his visibility, because like a lot of other people who are producers, he desires that spotlight and that limelight, you know, which is why his relationship with Eve didn't work out, because he couldn't bask in her shadow. You know, he couldn't just be a successful producer with a successful artist. He had to be the front person and, you know, still ran around on her. But let's look at Eve as an individual. She was an individual who came from a background of being a stripper too, meaning that she, like a lot of women, a lot of men, suffered from what I call whole self-esteem. I suffered from whole self-esteem, you know, in which I derived my affirmation from sex. And a lot of our young people derive their affirmation from sex. And I think that Stevie J is attracted to a certain type of female that is love-starved, that desires to have affirmation because, you know, of this, you know, they're willing to do any and everything, which probably would attract him to the Jocelyn character, who happens to be a stripper, who desired to get out of that lifestyle. And I think that that's his rap, you know, and it's a pretty sad situation.
Yeah, and it's a, when you look at it, you know, people, I think sometimes discount the value of, I know for a fact many, many, many women who have gone down that path, they start, you know, quote unquote dancing and everything. And, you know, this was something that was really shocking back when I was in college. This was a woman that I almost, you know, I considered marrying. But, and this wasn't the reason that we didn't, you know, make that type of commitment. But, you know, we were talking one time, and, you know, there was a little local strip club at the town I went to college in. I went to HBCU in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she was saying, you know, and she was in nursing school at the time. She graduated and became a nurse. She's been a nurse for, you know, 16 years now. But she said, you know, if I could, you know, be someplace people didn't know me and they couldn't touch me, I would strip. Now, oddly enough, she had zero relationship with her father.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my friends, you know, a lot of my friends that I went to school with, they happen to be from the tri-state area. Like, their number one goal, if they got a daughter, is to keep off the pole. Anything other than that is failure. Like, for real.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one priority, keeping her off the pole. And that's what all us are committed to. If you see my daughter out on the street getting out of line, you check her. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So if your daughter goes to dance and you're in her life, like, talk that money, it was an L. You went wrong somewhere. You know? And it's funny, like I said, now, in her case, like I said, she said that, But that thought, I don't even think that thought would come in her mind had she had effective leadership in her father in her life. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a father of two daughters. And as a father of two daughters, I look at, you know, the role that is necessary for me to play in their lives in terms of consistency as a person who once was able to manipulate women who suffered from, you know, that fatherless womb. You know, I recognize all too easy how easy it is for women to slip and stumble down that path if they don't have a consistent father figure in their life, whether it be their biological father or it be a father figure, because oftentimes, you know, a father isn't in a young girl's or young woman's life. But if she can have a father figure, whether that be an uncle, maybe an older brother, or, you know, maybe even a neighbor, a cousin, but someone who's going to step in that father role and honor that father role and not, you know, mutate it into something sick, as oftentimes a lot of these dysfunctional dudes do, because these women and young girls are so desirous of having a father figure. You have someone who will come in and pose as being a father figure, and the next thing you know, he's sticking hook in her. You know, this is what drives a lot of these young females today to now surrender or be turned off from femininity entirely. I heard a young female say she was raped so many times that she just decided that being a woman was being a victim. She wasn't going to be a victim anymore, so she began taping down her breasts. She began trying to be as less physically appealing from a feminine perspective as possible, and now when you see her, she looks like Queen Latifah and Said It All.
Wow.
And, you know, and that's one way that a lot of dysfunctional females go as a result of dealing with these deviant, monstrous male figures. And then the other way is some of them begin to believe in the so-called, hey, I'm going to punish men with my pussy. I'm going to make them pay for this pussy. I'm going to pop it on the pole and make them wave their dollars at me, and they're nothing but tricks. And I'm going to get all their money. And I'm going to prove that no relationship could ever work. You know, I meet some females today, now that I'm married, who throw themselves at me. And I know that a lot of these women aren't interested in me. They're interested in trying to get me to prove that marriage cannot work. You know, they'll be like, how you doing, and all this other stuff. And I'm like, you're not interested in me. It's an experiment. It's a challenge for you because you have it in your mind that no black man could want to be with a black woman. So that's what draws you to wanting to be with me. And it's a sad sort of situation, but I've seen it play out again and again. You know?
It's unfortunate.
But we're gonna play another clip from the show. And this clip is Bebe and Stevie J, and they have an encounter in the parking lot in which she asks him straightforward, is he fucking Jocelyn? And he outright bold-faced lies to her face and tells her no. And she asks him, was he sleeping with another woman? And he tells her no. And let's just listen to the way that this individual handles himself. We'll be back in a minute.
How many times are we going to go through that? That he say, she say, and all that?
So there's no truth to it, is what you're saying?
No truth. No truth to it. You know what I'm saying? I seen it in the studio one or two times before. I didn't Trent Broad. Why are you looking like that?
I hear you, Stevie, but I don't know any woman that was going to go run around saying she slept with a dude she didn't sleep with. I don't know one.
I don't
Why would
recall.
She do that? You don't recall?
I ain't take her down.
You don't recall?
I didn't take her down. I ain't take her down.
Okay. I don't believe you.
She ain't even on that level.
She don't have to be for you to take her down.
I didn't f*** her. Well, I don't remember. Can we just get past all of this bull?
Can we get past it?
Yes.
You know what? You make your money. I'm not stopping no checks coming in. Make your money. But why every time I go out, I have to hear about you and somebody? I don't always want another female coming in between us and our relationship. If they're your artists or you're supposed to be working with these girls, check them.
I got them.
They're not
them.
Running this.
You running
Jocelyn,
shit, baby.
Nobody. None of them bitches is running.
Yeah, that's your thing, baby. You running. You don't have to work.
Are you ready to get your mind right?
You see, stick to that clip, bro.
I mean, it was a thinly veiled attempt at being indignant about the situation. She's basically just, you know, putting it out there, like, look, you know, make your money, check the chicks. I mean, if you listen to it, you know, the code is, you know what, handle your business, keep your hoes in check, get better hoe management skills. That's basically what she's saying.
Exactly. You know, she seems to be complicit in the whole situation. It seems to be, as long as it's out of sight, I'll keep it out of mind. You know, you do what you do, but I don't want to hear about it. I don't want it to ever touch the realm of my social circle where my friends know about it, where it becomes embarrassing to me, and it makes me uncomfortable. You go do what you do. You be who you are, and I'm cool with that. And that is a very prominent mindset amongst a lot of females today. I guess it's an outgrowth of many of them buying into and believing all of these so-called statistics that are being skewed about how many of them will never get married, how many men are, you know, not looking to get married, how disproportionate the ratio of quote-unquote good men to good women is, and things of this nature. So many of them are willing to compromise and settle for that relationship dynamic. And I think that the danger of this show is that she is teaching a young generation of impressionable young females that this is acceptable behavior.
Well, you know, this is one thing I want to challenge, because I hear this from people from other generations, and the notion that things were a lot better in the past, and I want to challenge that just a little bit, because essentially, you know, what she said is what's been happening for 30, 40 years in the community. And so, for instance, you know, I got a lot of family down in the Charleston, South Carolina area. And, you know, the rules were, I mean, you know, especially if you had a good catch down there, the guy who works at the waterfront, right? Someone was a longshoreman. Longshoremen make a ton of money. They make, like, you know, longshoremen back in the, you know, 80s, 90s, before they made some cutbacks with their pay. It was enough for them to make six figures, because they would work sometimes 3-4 days in a row and get overtime after 8 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the rule was, like, if they did their thing, you know, out in the street, as long as they were bringing home the money, it was all good. And so it's not like, you know, things were that different in the past. It was just that, you know, men weren't as messy about it, you know, and mm-hmm. it would even be known around town sometimes in the South. But it's just one of those things where, you know, okay, you know what? She's the mistress, but I got access to everything. And that's the way they look. He going to die first, more likely. I'm going to keep everything. And that's just, like I said, it's very cynical, but that's just truth. And so you know, the difference now is that, you know, these women who have, like, I got a friend, a very close friend, dear friend of mine. She's from Union, South Carolina. You know, she went and did her thing, and, you know, she's got a master's degree. She makes, you know, really good money. And, you know, they're just not willing to deal with that, you know, because she likes her lifestyle because she doesn't have to depend on anyone for her lifestyle. Where before, you know, the women were a little bit more dependent, but now that they're able to, you know, get degrees and, you know, have a career, and in some cases, you know, have better opportunities in corporate America than, you know, black males can. You know, they're just not, you know, going for it the same way. So the marriage rates are coming down, primarily because their income has gone up. So it's not like, you know, in the past it was that much better. Dudes cheated. It was just that they weren't messy about it.
I would agree. You know, I have a number of friends who are, you know, 30 plus years old who have siblings who are their same age. And these siblings are by women that are not their mother.
And,
you know, you find out, oh, well, you know, my father had a whole other family. And
exactly.
I have a friend of mine who, you know, his family was from Jamaica. And, you know, the father sent them to the States when he was around 7 or 8 years old. And the father stayed in the States stayed in Jamaica till he was probably about 13 or 14 years old. And he came here. And when we got into our late 20s, you know, he began hearing whispering about a brother and a sister back in Jamaica. And when he went to Jamaica, he found out that not only did he have a brother and a sister, he had two other sisters, and one of them was actually the same age as him, which meant that his father not only was carrying on relations after the mother came to the States with him, but he was carrying on those relations while they were still in Jamaica as well. And that sort of situation was just tolerated. And so it's definitely not a new phenomenon, you know. I just think that today what happens is that, you know, nothing is new under the sun. It just appears new. It's just like, you know, sometimes my daughter's 12 years old, and sometimes she'll try to do little slick things to get to stay up and, you know, do something that she wants to do. Like, let's say if she wants to stay up on her Kindle, you know, reading a book or whatever, and I've told her to go to sleep, she has all these little slick ways that she thinks she's going to stay up. Well, she'll take the Kindle and be under the cover and think that if she hides under the cover, I won't be able to see the glow of the light. And I have to tell her, listen, you didn't invent sneaking to read in the dark. You know, I was reading in the dark. I just wasn't reading a Kindle. You know, I had a flashlight and I was reading the book. And, you know, none of these things are new. None of these things are things that anyone just recently invented. You know, there have been dudes who have done this for years. There have been women who have been accepting of this sort of situation for years. I think what's different now, though, is that what has intensified is the propaganda for it to be openly accepted, for it to be embraced as this is just what it is. You know?
Yeah, that's a lot of truth in that statement. You know, I guess, you know, one of the things that's, you know, the most stark depiction of this, you know, this part of reality, and I'll say part of reality because it does exist in some circles, is that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, women who are jaded. Like, I know it's so bad now that I give you an example. There's a young lady I know that you know, when I first met her, she was, you know, so-called homosexual. She liked women, right? And after knowing her for probably about 6 months, she was supposed to get married to a female, and she changed her mind on it. You know, because she had, you know, up until the time she, you know, we met, you know, she really, you know, she'd been, you know, she grew up in a group home. She had been molested. I mean, this girl has been through hell and back. And, you know, she hadn't, you know, been used to having a male presence in her life where someone not looking to take something from her, whether it be her dignity, her money, you know, sex, you know, whatever. And so now she's like, you know, she's waffling back and forth from, you know, I want a king or a queen, and she's like, because she's still young, you know?
Yeah.
And there's so many women that are jaded. Like, I mean, she crossed men off at age 21.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's that bad. Like, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the devil has a black man's face, you know?
Absolutely.
When you look at, you know, the movies like Precious, where, like, you know, you have this despicable figure, right? That's a reality. That's a part of reality.
Mm-hmm.
But when you consider, like, you know, and I'm not really a big fan of statistics because, you know, they do a lot of sampling. You can make statistics up as you go along to fit a certain paradigm or a certain, you know, story that you want to present. But, you know, I think the numbers are something like, you know, for black women, more than 25%, you know, suffer from some type of abuse or molestation, usually at the hands of a family member or a friend of the family. Now, I'll tell you what's crazy about that is that I have probably about 7 or 8 women that I'm close to that I'm friends with outside of my family, and I want to say 6 or 8 have been in that situation.
Well, I would say 8 out of every 10 black women that I know have been in that situation.
I mean, is that not like, I mean, so 75% and 80%?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a very high statistic, and unfortunately, no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to confront it. Everyone wants to talk around it, and, you know, people get in there, you know, like so-called conscious circles, right? And
uh-huh.
Everyone wants to romanticize our past or the parts of the past that make them feel good.
Exactly.
We were kings and queens, we built the pyramids and all these other things, but no one wants to talk about, well, okay, we did all these great things, but what the fuck are we doing right now? Or
exactly.
We did all those great things, and how is it that with all those great accomplishments, we allowed ourselves to be conquered, subjugated, and put in the position that we're in right now? Or we did all those great things. We made all these great accomplishments, and yet and still, look at where we are right now. We're at the bottom of the barrel. We're the lowest of the low. We are the least respected group of people on the entire planet. And most of what we're doing isn't the direct result of others anymore. We're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't want to talk about that, you know. There are folks who, and I believe foundational for our disease is racism, but I recognize that the symptoms that we are manifesting on a day-to-day basis, what we are dealing with, is escapism. The inability or the unwillingness to confront our own dysfunctional afflictions. We don't ever want to look in the mirror. We don't ever want to say, Uncle Jack is a fucking rapist. Grandpa so-and-so fucked Aunt so-and-so, and that's why Cousin so-and-so is here.
Uh-huh.
We don't ever want to say that. We want to talk around that, you know.
Oh,
no one wants to look at that reality, and then when you confront them with that reality, the rationalization is, well, the white man did this and the white man did that. And I'm never going to deny what happened to us and how terrible what happened to us was and how many of these dysfunctional behaviors that we're doing right now are behaviors that we learned as a result of our oppression and enslavement. But we got to, at some point, put our hands down in the damn dirt and recognize what the hell is going on with us right now and just stop all this sticking our head in the damn sand and pretending we don't see the fact that cousin so-and-so is a fucking rapist.
You know? Man. And you know, I come from a very, very large family. And, I mean, everything, every last one of those statements, you know, as I got older, it occurred. My grandmother had 15 children, and she had, I think when she died back in the 80s, they said on her obituary, she had close to 89 grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, every situation that you mentioned from, you know, one of my uncles that's, you know, that lives at home, he lost his daughter, and my father had to take, you know, custody of his daughter because I found out just, like, recently, the past couple of years that, you know, say he was touching the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, my mother, like, you know, I guess for whatever reason, you know, told me, said, you know, I got something I want to show you. So she showed me a letter, a two-page letter this little girl wrote, saying, you'll never take anything from me again, and I hate you, and blah, 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 blah. Right? So I was like, wow. Cause this, and what was crazy about this was my uncle that I was really close with because he used to cut my hair. I used to go to Jerry's Den. He used to, you know, be in the Bronx, too. He used to cut hair on 164 Alton. He used to go over there and get my hair cut all the time. He's right across from my father. And, you know, to find this out, it was just mind-blowing. So fast forward, and, you know, I had an older brother that I just recently, like, became close with in the past 5 years. And there's a family reunion. And this same uncle was there. And my brother was just kind of coming back and forth because he's, you know, he lives in D.C. and he basically secludes himself from family. He doesn't really deal with the family a whole lot. And so his daughter was saying how she wanted to go to New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, oh, yeah, he was like, yeah, he's coming. I had to say, oh, you know. Now, I didn't, you know, because number one, I didn't have any proof. I looked him up on the, you know, the pedophile website to see if he was on there. But I guess back in that time, you know, there was no registry or anything. So I basically just intervened, and I said, well, no, I said, you know, I don't think that would be a good idea, you know. And I told my brother probably, like, he's just not responsible because, you know, because it's one of those situations that, you know, I didn't know exactly. Should I tell him, hey, you know, suspect he suspected of pedophilia or just, you know, so he's just not a responsible person. I told him about another incident. But, I mean, I've seen all these things that you're talking about from, you know, potential incest within the family, and no one wants to talk about it. I mean, even in my own family, knowing that, you know, and my parents don't even know this, but I got a sister that lives in D.C. And my other sister told me that our father is not our other sister's father. But it's like one of those situations where it's like no one talks about it. And, you know, they don't know that I know that. But it's like those, and it's just very irritating the fact that, you know, there's so many secrets. So many secrets. It's like, you know, how do you ever get to the bottom of what the problem is if you can't really sit down and really digest what are all the internal issues within the family to help you move forward and be healthy.
Absolutely.
And like I said, there's, like you said, this is, see, I call, you know, you call it escapism, which I agree with wholeheartedly. You know, there's a gentleman I know who's a cardiologist that we know, he's got a show on Blog Talk too. And, you know, I told him, he said, we have to kill, you know, niggerhood at all costs. That's bottom line. Like, that's really what it boils down to. It's like, there is a lot of money in niggerhood.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of money in it, you know. And that's what you have to kill. It's just everything from the mentality that I don't really have, you know, a secure and safe place to stay, but I'm going to get a 72-inch screen TV to put in my one-and-a-half-bedroom apartment. We got to kill that. We got to come and tell me, literally, like, and I'm not judging the person, but, like, I went to, you know, when I went home, you know, in the South Bronx, like, off Alexander Avenue, one of my cousin's friends, you know, she took me to her house. So I'm looking around the house, number one, okay, it's a small apartment. Two, your house ain't clean, but you got a 72-inch screen TV with a extensive DVD collection. You know what I mean? Like, those are resources for something else. And the sad part about it is people who think like that, like, you know, yeah, I'm going to get me even, you know, something else bigger if it comes out, is because we're lacking in so many other areas that, you know, it's retail therapy. That's one of the dangers of living in New York, and you know this, is that, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, they can't, you know, they don't live in the most secure environment, but the thought process always has been, and you probably have heard this adage, like, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on outside. As long as my inside of my house is clean and looks nice, I don't care.
Absolutely. I mean,
you know what I mean? I got four TVs.
One of the things that, you know, I look at and I examine in my own, when I shake my own family tree, and, you know, and I'm shaking that damn tree all the time to get all the bullshit out the tree, because, you know, I'm father now, and I got to make sure that none of those dysfunctional seeds take up root in my children. And, you know, and I've got family members who I'm not going to allow them to be around my daughters. Not because they're pedophiles, but just because some of them are too entrenched in the negative, not negative, negative mindset. Some of them are too poverty-minded or have that lack consciousness. And I don't give a shit if they ever want to say, you think you're better than me. Because one of the things that you'll notice when you're dealing with an individual who is a self-identified nigger, and I don't get into the name calling, you know, when a person labels themselves a nigger, that's how I address them. You want to be a nigger? Then I'm going to call you a nigger. But I'm not going to just randomly run around and just call a person a nigger, because I don't think it's the most constructive term. And I've heard all the arguments for, oh, well, it means Ethiopian king, and I've heard all that bullshit rationalization. But to me, what that is that's excuse-making. What that is that's individuals who want to play word games. Because if nigger is a mispronunciation of naga or nigas, then why don't you then begin pronouncing it the correct way? And correcting other individuals and letting them know the correct pronunciation. The reason why you don't do the correct pronunciation and the correct spelling is because you're a nigger. You're exactly what individuals are calling you, a nigger. And when you're questioned on your bullshit, you want to come up with a niggerosity, a nigger philosophy. Oh, well, you know. But you want to be a Panthers nigga then. You know, some niggas are so deep, they shallow, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, some niggas are so conscious that they're not even fucking awake, you know.
I'm
like, woo, you a deep nigga. Nigga, you ain't deep, you just stupid. You know,
oh, man.
And it don't fool me. I just look at some of them. But what I recognize is that is a sign of cowardice, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
An individual who doesn't want more and won't aspire to more, and that's that crab in the barrel mentality that Booker T. Washington talked about, you know, where some of us just don't want another one to do better. When you hear an individual, like, for instance, I grew up in the hood. I grew up in Brooklyn. I grew up in the worst of the worst neighborhoods. Brownsville, East New York,
oh my
Bed-Stuy,
God.
Flatbush, Crown
Lake Avenue, Pickin, all that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I grew up in the worst of neighborhoods. I grew up around niggers. Niggers. I grew up around some of the most cutthroat niggers that you will ever see on the face of this planet. And I survived. And I thrived. And as a result of that, what that experience has taught me, anyone that I know who grew up in the environment that I grew up in, well, not anyone, but a lot of those folks who grew up in those sorts of conditions, their mindset is, I don't ever want to be in that condition ever again. You know,
exactly.
When they got out of it, they wanted to be away from it. You know, not run away from physically, like if they lived in a project, not say, oh, I want to run away from the project, but to say, listen, I want to run away from the project mentality.
Oh.
You know, and you find individuals who are still in that condition who make all sorts of excuses and say shit like, you know, like I had an aunt who lived in the projects, and she would say, doesn't matter that she lives in Brownsville projects, she would say, I don't give a shit if housing comes and sweeps the floor every day or whatever. During the night, these damn people leave cigarette butts and beer bottles and all sorts of shit in the hallway over the weekend, and I'm not going to clean the hallway till Monday morning, and I'm not going to live in filth. So she went to the store, discount store, bought a broom, bought a dustpan, bought a mop that was specifically going to be used for cleaning that hallway. And every time before she went to sleep, she would go out in that hallway and sweep her floor and mop her floor. And other people would be like, you don't fucking work for housing. Who the fuck you think you is? And all this other stuff. And then people would say to her stuff like, bitch, you think you better than me, bitch. You ain't better than me. And that's the nigga mentality. When a person says to you, you think you better than me, like people say that to me all the time, nigga, you think you better than me. I go, no, I don't think I'm better than you. You think I'm better than you. I know I'm better than you. I ain't even got to say it. I know I'm better than the shit that you settling for. But it's the fact that you think it. That's what's bothering you.
Yeah, exactly.
It ain't bothering me, because if it was, it ain't bothering me because I don't need to run around and throw it in your face. Damn, you ain't shit. I don't need to do that. I'm just being me. But you got
exactly.
the problem.
Exactly. And you know, the sad part about that is, you know, like, I grew up around 163rd and Trinity by Forest Projects. And, you know, I had some really good opportunities. I mean, I got a chance to go to private school on scholarship. And, you know, I remember coming home and, you know, I didn't smoke and I didn't drink. And, you know, and that's the exact same thing, you know, like one of my friends said, yo, man, you know, and you ready for this one? You should, like, get left back, yo. You know, everybody talking about you because, you know, everybody I want to say that I knew in my circle had got left back at least once. And, like, you know, my parents would, you know, they would be like, you know, they would see me, like, I'd come home with an award or something because I was on the first floor of all places in 1A.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone could see my business. And so, you know, it was like, oh, that's so nice, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it's like, you know, their parents say, why can't you do such and such? Not, you know, looking at the conditions. I never went to my zone school. I always went to school, like a magnet school or somewhere else. I went to school in Manhattan for the most part, either Harlem or in Manhattan. Long story short to all is that, you know, I would get that same type of discussion when I come home, like, you know, you should get left back, or, you know, they talk about you, son, like, you know, you don't smoke and drink with everybody, you know, so they be thinking that, you know, you think you're better than everybody. I was like, nah, I said, it has nothing to do with it. I said, it's just my personal choice, you know, but, you know, I had the mentality that, you know, I remember growing up, and I'm pretty sure you probably remember this, but, you know, I lived in a building that was, you know, condemned at one point where the city had to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And the pipes was frozen. And we just had to go outside in the fire hydrant and get water and boil it just so it could be clean. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And I don't know, something about those experiences, like you said, I would never let that happen again, ever. You know what I mean? So, definitely. And you know, like I said, there was times when I felt, you know, conflicted about the fact that there were so many people I left behind, because after I went to college, I was supposed to move back. But I did a stint in the Coast Guard, and I ended up, you know, staying here in the Carolinas. And I used to feel really, like, conflicted about the fact there were so many people I felt like I left behind, because I always felt like there's certain people, had I been, you know, been around, maybe they wouldn't have gotten themselves in a situation, and maybe they'd still be alive. And
my perspective is, if you don't leave some people behind, you can't inspire other people to move forward. Because if you just stay where people expect you to stay, then you can't move forward to where you're supposed to be, where you aspire and desire to be, and therefore other folks can't get to that next level. So sometimes you got to just break away from that bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's hard, but you got to do it. We just want to give you guys a reminder. We're coming up on 12 minutes. We're definitely going to go over. Call-in number is 347-308-8527. Once again, the call-in number is area code 347-308-8527. Tonight we're talking about the show Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, and we're talking about its impact on the black family and the so-called hip-hop generation. Got a number of callers still on the switchboard. We're going to go to caller from the 907 area code. Caller from the 907 area code, what's your name, question, or comment?
Hey, this is OP.
It's good, OP. Can you hear? That's a lot of niggas going on there, OP. That is a lot of nigga going on there. You're about to have a nigga breakdown.
You got to eat your own at this point in time. You got to have a racial cleanse where you breed these niggas out of, because the white man has grafted our race. He's grafted our race. You hear all these stories about when the Nation of Islam said that Yaqub grafted the white man? The white man grafted the nigga!
So what's good, bro? You got something you wanted to add to the conversation?
Who, me? OP?
I'm sorry, bro. What did you say?
I was just wondering if I could pick up some Battletoads, if that'd be possible. He's a new rapper from down in Atlanta. He's got this new single called Putty Putty. It's pretty good.
Okay. So,
look, I mean,
so I'm a little confused, bro. So, I mean,
he's a troll, man. Come on, stop. He's a troll.
I assumed he was. But, you know, one of the things that I recognize is that whenever you're talking constructive, you're going to have these.
Break the way. To produce this motherfucking inconsistency in our thoughts. Sold the mixed breed, too. I just want y'all to know that. Sold his mixed breed babies right along with your full-blooded nigga babies. Okay, so you motherfuckers can try to find somewhere where you're different. You're not different. Okay, a nigga is a nigga is a nigga. Okay? And so.
And there you have it. Perfect.
Oh, my God.
That nigga mentality dies a slow, slow death. You know?
Oh, my God.
Whenever you try to get up out that barrel, niggas get paranoid. Niggas get angry. Niggas get upset. Niggas be like, What that nigga trying to do? Nigga, what? Nigga, you crazy. Nigga, you ain't better than me. Nigga, fuck you, nigga. Nigga.
You know who did a very constructive piece on this? You are you familiar with Brother Holipsism?
What's his name?
Holipsism. He's from Brooklyn. He's from your hood. Matter of fact, he's from Holipsism Haven.
Oh, okay.
You know Holip, right?
I think I know who you're talking about, bro.
Yeah, real good brother. You've been around Baltimore about as long as you have. You know what's so mm-hmm. funny? There's so many of y'all from Brooklyn that's doing something similar. Y'all, a lot of y'all don't know each other.
He
did a very constructive piece on this because he's kind of like a, you know, he's very philosophical, but in a good way. He's definitely a person who has a lot of insight. And he talked about this, like he called it, I think, the death of niggerdom. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just the... I mean, just, you know, because it was a lot of angst in what he was saying. I feel it all the time. It's like there's so many things that, you know, like, you know, at one point I used to co-host the show. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, people, you know, just like, you know, when Gus would do his show and a question would come up about, you know, how do I, you know, get a house? So I worked in real estate for 11 years as a lender and a loan officer. And, I mean, there's so much constructive information that's out there, right? And yet, you know, we'll go out and we'll look for, you know, anything else to bullshit and waste time. But when it's talking about something constructive that can improve your condition, people know where to be found. Like, we used to do that show. I used to give, like, you know, websites where you can get down payment assistance, where you can get interest rates on loans as low as, you know, 1% for 30 years for life, like, and it was just very, very frustrating just to see the sense of, like, apathy there was towards it, that conversation. We're talking about being able to dramatically improve and change the condition for the rest of your life. And the conversation falls on deaf ears.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I find particularly interesting, like, we got the young brother Polite. Shout out to Brother Polite. Brother's 28, 29 years old, right? He's going to be 29 on August 10th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Young brother who turned his life around from crippin' and gang activity to deciding that he wanted to share some constructive information with his people.
Mm-hmm.
And initially started out sharing information that spoke culturally to the dynamic of where we are as oppressed people, right? And
mm-hmm.
recently, he began talking about conscious commerce, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the necessity of people being proactive in their commerce and their economics. And
mm-hmm.
folks want to focus on the fact that he has three wives and all this other shit. Everybody want to focus on any and everything other than stop focusing on that man's domestic situation and look at the fact that he's presenting you with an economic platform and resources so that you can change your situation. You're too busy worried about where he put his dick at night and how he get those three fine women. You know?
Uh-huh.
And that's the focus of a lot of folks. It's like, you know, like when I look at the show Love and Hip Hop, you know, everybody excused the behavior of Stevie J because he's a so-called prosperous producer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And no one looks at or examines how dysfunctional that behavior is. No one looks at and examines how he is behaving like a patriarchal white male. He's running around talking about, I took you out of the strip club and I'll put you back in the strip club. He sounds like a damn slave master. I mean, when I heard it, I was like, this Negro is crazy. In fact, I said, that nigga is crazy. You know, like, who the fuck does he think he is? So much so that the woman Mimi has been around him for so long that she's now functioning in the same mindset. I'm your partner. I want 20% of the plantation business.
Exactly.
And he turned around and said, 20%, that's what Puff was getting. So he was angry that his woman wanted to fuck him like Puff was fucking him.
Uh-huh.
And there are some dudes out here who are comfortable being fucked.
Uh-huh.
We don't like to talk about it, you know. Some of these dudes are the dudes that like to go to prison, you know.
Oh,
they do a lot of petty crime so that they could go away for 12 months, 18 months. And no one ever questions, why is dude always going to jail? Like, he likes jail. What is it about jail that attracts him to it? Is it the big, strong, muscular men that just love going to jail? And what is it about dudes that like to hang out in strip clubs around other men in an aroused state? I mean, most of y'all know y'all ain't getting no pussy. Now you and your boy all hopped up and y'all leaving the strip club with hard dicks. Y'all just looking at each other. What's that about?
I never understood that, fam. Never understood. You know, going in, spending. Yeah, I've seen dudes going in, they come straight off of an assembly line. I come from a plant with their uniform on, with the tag on their shirt, spending money, and you know they ain't making a lot of money. Spending $200 that could have been going home to one of their kids or something. You know what I mean? That's
well,
what I mean.
To me, what I've noticed is that is usually dudes that are usually desirous of engaging in sexual contact or play with other men. Like, for instance, the woman is just a conduit, you know. Like, they know that a lot of these women are dysfunctional and broken, and as a result, a lot of these women allow themselves or have been forced to be sexual receptacles where men stick their dicks in them and ejaculate, right? And a lot of these dudes desire to put their dicks where other men put their dicks. You know? And it's not about the woman. It's about they want to connect with those men. You know? And they're just using a woman as a conduit. You know? For those of you who are listening, the calling number, we got a minute and 30 seconds. It's 347-308-8527. Once again, the calling number is area code 347-308-8527. You got questions or comments, you got less than a minute to call in to get up on the board. I got a 623. I'm going to open and ask if you got a question or comment. If you don't have a question or comment, say you're just listening and keep your phone on mute. 623, question or comment?
Hey, it's Monica from Phoenix. I'm just listening.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Just keep your phone on mute, all right?
Yes, sir.
I'll keep your mic open, and if you have something you want to chime in with, you just unmute your phone.
Okay.
So for those who are on the live feed, I'm going to give you guys a minute to call in. I want to play this final clip from Love and Hip Hop, and we're going to just keep the discussion going. And this clip right here was over the top, because this is the showdown clip. This is the clip where it all came out about what Stevie J was doing with Jocelyn. We'll be back in a minute. Calling number 347-308-8527. Once again, 347-308-8527. It's your man, S-Dot. We'll be back in a minute.
Woman is right. Time to speak out. I'm tired of being the other woman while Mimi and Stevie's just living this regular life like nothing happened. If Mimi wants to get involved in his business, I'll get her involved. I'm going to get straight to the point. You know, you and I know that when I first met him back in December, he didn't come home for 3 months. So I'm going to just tell you like this. I know who baby I have in my stomach, and you know too. Disgusted. She's talking all this to me. I'm like, okay, Jocelyn, if you think I'm going to lose my cool because you tell me you're pregnant by Stevie,
not going to happen. Baby, you're not worth it.
Jocelyn, I know what I'm dealing with when it comes to TV. I'm not a fool. I know exactly what I got. As far as you are concerned, you're a stripper who's trying to get on.
I was a stripper, and I'm not trying to get on. I was a stripper. I haven't been to the
around.
I haven't been to the
every which way from Sunday. Now you're pregnant about him?
Yes.
So you
even
know
who
you're pregnant
about? I'm pregnant about your man.
I get it. You want to be a star. I get it. You get pregnant and this, that. And, bitch, please. This pulled you out of the strip club in VIP.
At least I know what I'm dealing with, and I'm getting myself.
I know exactly.
4 months.
With
4 months.
Hard.
This is him right here. This is him right here texting me. See? Why is he texting me while we talking?
As we're having our conversation, she says that he's sending her text messages. So I said, well, tell him to come up here. I don't understand why I was at this meeting by myself anyway.
Oh, there he go.
What you letting him know? What's going on?
She tells me she's pregnant by you.
That's what she said?
Who I be every day.
Who I be every day.
Your baby. It is his baby. What are you doing with that?
I don't know any man in a right in mind who's going to carry around the next bitch pregnancy test in their pocket. Who does that?
So when's the last time y'all about 5 days ago?
A month ago.
About five days ago.
About a month ago.
I'm not going to argue with him about
when a month ago. Very well could be your baby. Pregnant.
I'm not arguing with you about how many the last time I
that maybe. Is not even the case.
So now it's maybe.
I mean,
that
it's been a month,
so,
you know.
Been a month, so maybe.
The part that just really disgusts me is your sloppy. You this bitch, and she could potentially be pregnant by you, and then you want to come home and lay down with me?
Really?
That's what we are.
Obviously, she's pregnant. You think it's cute?
Is she pregnant?
You got the test in your hand. You got the test in your hand. You carrying
don't
play around.
Stupid.
Yo,
chill.
No, you
chill.
Good luck with your baby. Get your hand out of my face, y'all. Get your hand
where
out
you
of my
going,
face.
Where you going, Mimi? Come here, man.
Good luck. Talk to you, bitch. And have a good night.
I'm glad that Mimi left because it was supposed to be a conversation that Jocelyn and I had before Mimi even came into the picture. So I'm glad she left because I had to handle my business. I got papers on you for the rest of your life.
What?
I send you back to the strip club.
You send yourself back to go pimping. Bitch. Don't play with me. Why you with me? Go get your bitch. Get your bitch.
Or what?
I don't want to talk to you anymore. What we have is over. Bye.
But I gotta face reality. It's too bad, it's too bad, too bad, baby. But I gotta face reality. The day you had a visitor, or should I say, an old friend. But wait a minute. That's not where it is, no. Is there something that you wanna tell me? 'Cause I'm believing what your friends say about your hidden secrecy. And girlfriend, she wasn't disrespectful. In fact, she's 100% sure. And how can I argue with her? Holding on, baby.
Are you ready to get your mind right?
Yeah. What's good, people? What's good, Thomas?
Hello?
Yeah, what's good, man?
I don't even know where to begin with that clip. I'm just, oh my goodness. Wow. That was pain. You know, it's one thing to listen, you know, see it on TV, but just to listen to it, was excruciatingly painful.
Yeah.
You know, not only this, you know, I guess the interaction between the two women, right? So, you know, from Jocelyn's perspective, you know, she feels as if, you know, she's doing something to take from Mimi. You know, mm-hmm. by stating the obvious that, of course, that she's been, you know, in sexual relations with Stevie J, as well as, you know, going to be the mother of his future child.
Mm-hmm.
And then, on the other hand, he actually, you know, believes she is being ladylike.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got that, but that's like, she felt like she was being ladylike in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in other words, like her response was one of, you know, well, if you think I'm going to get upset, I'm not going to do it because I'm better than you. But yeah, but, I mean, but Terry, you look like a fool on TV.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just so many places, and, you know, the fact that he comes in and, he was like, you know, I can keep doing this for the rest of your life. So, and the dude said something like that. You know, I remember, you know, back a long time ago, guys would, you know, get certain women pregnant in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was like a badge of honor, like especially if she was one who was very attractive. It was just
mm-hmm.
to let everyone know, not that he wanted to be with her, not because he loved her, not because he even wanted to have offspring, but because he just wanted to have proof that he had sexual relations with that person.
Absolutely.
And you know what's sad about that, and the fact that you can identify as something that goes on, not just probably in the five boroughs, it goes on, you know, in Philly, it goes on in Memphis. You know, it's just that mentality of, you know, I don't care that a human life is going to be impacted by this. I just want to show validation that, you know, I'm a stud.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that all stems from our slave condition, in that many of us during slavery, we were pretty much functioning like roosters. That's
oh, yeah.
What they allowed us to be. They we were studs. That they would say, you know, hey, have sex with this woman, have sex with that woman, because you're from the Mandingo tribe, or you're from this tribe, and your particular tribe is, you know, strong. We want you to breed with this one. We want you to breed with that woman. And breeding without responsibility for generations became encoded within our DNA. And passed down from generation to generation as, you know, something to be proud of, breeding without responsibility. And in this generation today, you know, I see a lot of brothers who say a little stupid shit like, you know, I had a kid, or I put a baby in her because I want the baby to have nice hair. You know, some dumb shit like that. You know, and the roosterism is crazy, because I think about the years that I misspent my life functioning in roosterism. Shout out to everybody still wallowing in roosterism. Y'all niggas need to get off that rooster, you know. But it was definitely not a constructive time. And many of those individuals that function in that roosterism, they end up like Stevie J and Jaheim singing shit like this. We'll be back in a minute.
Get them slick. Yeah. Putting it down. Put it down.
No little shame, man. What you pick them up, fly. You look just like genuine. I know he's been talking about fun.
And your skin darker than mine. Straighter hair too good. Both her eyes is rough. He ain't got my eyes. They ain't brown enough. Playing baby shower stunts. I was counting the months. All I'm thinking is why me and what the f*** you want. You better call that pretty boy up and harass him. Job told me that you was like an ass with him. I ain't your baby father. Ain't even close to that. Now what I look like? Forget it. Don't answer that. I'm probably a fool. You know what? You're probably right. Like I'm probably his pops and I'm probably white. Get on before you get jumped on and such. That little f*** you ain't know what you stoned or what. You can't just lie. Job die your baby dash. You need to slow down, love, cause you're moving too fast. Tell him, Job.
Is now coaching on the game. Get the Getting Over It guide, exposing the game. Learn how to stop playing yourself on RTK Communications. Don't hate the player, learn to peep game. Exposing the game, the first volume of the 7 series Get Your Mind Right, from inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach, S. Jones.
So many men that I know sing, Little Nigga Ain't Mine.
Oh. Wow.
And you know, I discovered that song from some little young dudes playing a song in my office one day. You know, they're in their 20s. You know, and I had the Jaheim album, but for some reason, I guess I just skipped over that song. And they were playing it on repeat over and over again. Little nigga ain't mine, nigga ain't mine. Then I asked them, each of them, I was like, how many of you have a relationship with your father? And none of them had a relationship with their father. And each of them said they could envision their father singing this song about them.
Wow.
You know, and when we sit down and we think about, you know, like, let's go back a few years ago with the Rick Ross incident, when he got into the so-called orchestrated beef with 50 Cent. Mm-hmm. And, it came out where supposedly the mother of his child did a big publicity stunt, went on a shopping spree with 50 Cent and all of this. And then you had Rick Ross in the media saying openly on YouTube and all these video clips saying, you know, 50 Cent, if he spent all that money on a fur coat, he's supposed to get some pussy, because if I spent all that money on a fur coat for any bitch, I'm going to get me a fur coat. I'm going to get me some pussy. Now, you just think about it. YouTube is accessible by everyone. Years from now, Rick Ross's son can go on YouTube and pull up a video clip of his father saying his mother should have gave some man some man. Just the non-thinking of this generation of misguided people is just sad. See, and that's why this television show, Love and Hip Hop, is so disturbing to me, because a lot of our young people haven't developed proper critical thinking skills because many of them haven't been mentored because most of the older people around them have been absent or deficient, so that many of these young impressionable people see a show like Love and Hip Hop or listen to an artist like Rick Ross or any number of artists who are putting out irresponsible content, and they begin to believe that this is reality. And it's sad that this is the generation that one day is going to take care of them. You know, these are going to be the decision makers.
Yeah. Well, in our case, I don't know if they're going to be decision makers. I don't know if we can say that in our case, as far as our community is concerned.
I don't know if they're necessarily going to be.
If anything, they'll be part of the serfs or part of the prison population at the rate things are going. But here's one thing I'll say for Mona Scott. Mona Scott, this is why I have a modicum of at least some morsel of respect for her, and I'll tell you why. Because at least she is honest about this is a hustle about to make money. Yes, I'm exploiting people, and that's what it is. Now, you take someone like Tyler Perry, he will tell you that he's doing something for the good of the community, right, by putting out certain type of images, which, you know, they're not as detrimental, but, you know, showing a black man wearing a dress acting like a senior age, you know, elder woman, you know, and mm-hmm. some of the other things he puts out, you know, like Precious, which he helped to, you know, fund Precious. You know, don't be disingenuous. At least she says this is a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not hiding it. She tell you, I'm out to get the paper, and you deal with it or you don't deal with it. You know what? I know where you stand. But that's why I have a problem. Like, you know, I'm not envious of his success. I'm happy that he took himself from being, you know, poor and stuff. But don't try to tell me everything you're doing is about the community, because it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, but it's because people are in a state of unconsciousness and non-thinking that we are so quick to gravitate to anything that looks like us. See, this is as a result of what I call nigger marketing. Nigger marketing is very successful. Nigger is a global brand, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it is an iconic global brand. So much so that they now proclaim that it now transcends being a black identifier. Nigger is a descriptor of a mindset, according to the marketers, you know, which is their way of, you know, refining what nigger marketing actually is. But it is a absolutely brilliant global campaign that enables folks that they don't have to do anything to you. All they to do is hire a nigger, and the nigger just wants to be a nigger. So much so that niggers have taken ownership of niggers. Have you ever noticed that, you know, for instance, when you see two niggers, what's the first thing they say? What up, my nigger? You already know, my nigger. That's what it is, my nigger. You know, it's my nigger. They want to own a nigga. It's all about niggas taking ownership of being niggas. And whenever someone says, you know, bro, you know, I understand why that's cool for you, but I don't particularly think that's cool for me. Then it becomes, fuck that nigga. Who that nigga think he is? That nigga ain't shit. Man, fuck that nigga. That nigga ain't better than me. Nigga, you think you better than me? And they'll still keep with the nigga. Nigga, you the death. you know, and they've made themselves the nigger police.
Mm-hmm.
They got to go tell everybody. Yo, you know what this nigga said? Man, this nigga over here, this nigga here. I mean.
Yeah. Ah, oh, God. That's that. It's all too familiar. Also, you know, I got a cousin that, you know, he moved from the Bronx back. I brought him down here, oh my goodness, probably 6 years ago. He's done very well. He's thrived down here. He's, you know, he hasn't gotten in trouble because he had a real long rap sheet. He got, you know, he got arrested 43 odd times, something like that.
Mm.
He's done very well. He's worked 2 jobs. He worked for UPS. He got another job.
Please, you work for UPS.
He's just a friend. Oh my goodness.
Hold on. He worked for UPS. Hold on.
Yeah.
That's just too good. Hold on.
Can you feel it? Nothing can save you, for this is the season of catching the vapors. And since I got time, what I'm going to do is tell you how to spread it throughout my crew. Well, you all know T.D. Swan, who sang on my records. Make the music nobody beats the biz, well, check it. Back in the days before this began, he used to try to talk to this girl named Fran. That type of female with fly Gucci wear, with big truck jewelry and extensions in the hair. When Swan tried to kick it, she always spat, talking about, nigga, please, you work for UPS.
You work for UPS.
Oh, man. Woo, that takes me back. That's showing my age. Anyway. Yeah. You know, we were having a talk, and I took him and my other cousin out to eat, and we were talking, and he was like, you know, he's like, yeah, son, you know, nothing, man, I miss that New York Chinese food and blah, blah. And he's like, man, you know, we could go get some Chinese food if you want. I was like, nah, I think I'll skip it because, you know, I don't really mess with Chinese food like that, you know, for various reasons, you know. But say, well, so what you trying to say? You know, I was like, well, I said, really? I don't mess with it because of the sodium they put in. They put MSG. I said, I want you to think about something. How often is it that you see the Chinese people eating their own food?
They don't eat that shit. See, when you see them, they eating soupy rice, they eating fresh vegetables and steamed fish. That food was created when the Chinese were building the railroad. That's their equivalent to soul food. It's flat.
Exactly.
You know, they ate that when they were forced to eat it. They don't eat that shit.
And he thought about it, and he was like, yeah, you're right, son. I was like, yo, I said, it's mad sodium. I mean, people, especially if you're diabetic or something, you go to a Chinese restaurant, you'll kill yourself, you know what I mean? So I was like, you know, that's why I don't mess with that. I said, and then you're just not reliable, you know. I mean, I know people who, you know, work for, you know, in food inspections in New York, and they told me the whole stories about, you know, going, and they got so many places, you know, failed, and, you know, they got rat, you know, chopped of a rat or something like that, you know, because they eat that stuff. They think it's all good. So, you know, you got that mystery meat in there and you messing with it. That's, I'm good on that. You know what I mean? So, you know, but yeah. And it was just like, you know, that mentality, you know, it was just like, you know, or like just kind of like if, you know, you tell people like, you know, I don't eat any red meat or pork, you know, I mainly eat like, you know, like, you know, salmon and, you know, and I eat a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. But you think you're better than me? Is this ain't good enough? You don't want none of these chitlins? No. Sorry, I don't eat pig intestines that have to be washed in borax and bleach.
You know, it's interesting you mention that because I got a chapter in one of my books called Eat Shit and Die. and, you know, one of my editors read the caption for the title of the chapter. They was like, what the fuck? And then they was like, oh, nah, ain't no way you can put this book. And it's called Eat Shit and Die for that exact reason, that that's exactly what the enslavers told our ancestors. They told them to eat shit and die. when they gave them the entrails of a hog, the hog's intestines filled with shit, mucus, and blood, and shit, they told them essentially, nigga, eat shit and bow. And because of our ingenuity as a people, our resilience, we were able to take shit and make it into sugar, turn it into chitlins. We were able to take lemons and make it into lemonade. But the problem is that we don't recognize that now we no longer have to eat shit and die. We still want to eat shit and die.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, I'm gonna have to go hard on y'all Brooklyn cats for a minute. You know, it's just like the dudes who guard body, but they eat a spice ham and cheese here, and they still, you know, pumping, you know, some of them.
Yes, I knew a lot of those dudes. You know, see, because I was born and raised in the Nation of 5%, right?
Okay.
So I grew up in that, right? So that was always my name, right? So when I got to junior high school, it became popular for a lot of dudes who all of a sudden their name wasn't William, now their name was Wise. You know, Ronnie's name all of a sudden became Raheem Dualar. You know,
yeah.
And I was like, motherfucker, your name is Ronnie. But, you know, all of a sudden these dudes were becoming righteous. These were the dudes who used to make fun of me as a kid. It's interesting to me to see so many of these dudes. This is how I know how full of shit a lot of black folks are, because I've been through a lot of this shit. I mean, folks would stand around in circles and talk till they blew in the face. Today's Malcolm Max is not a sex god. All these born to God, because that's the, and then the black man go, and the queen earth go, and I see it in the man, and the actual fact go, and what do you mean? And I'd be like, and then I seen that motherfucker eating a spice ham sandwich. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing eating spice ham? Because I'm God, and anything I eat, I can make righteous. I was like, oh, y'all motherfuckers, you know, motherfuckers just got all kind of rationalization for bullshit.
Oh, my God.
You know.
Oh, ooh, you made my head hurt. This, that spice ham and cheese, and then when you asked someone, said, well, did you read every part of Clarence 13X book? You know, because don't, and because what they, and this is how twisted, y'all, because, you know, when he went out to proselytize to the young brothers in the hood, he went to become part of the environment, but he wasn't meant for you to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's the part they seem to forget, is that he went there to try to minister to them in their environment and to bring them out the environment. They only remember the fact, well, you know, he class 13X, he hustled. That's the only part they remember.
Mm-hmm.
It's conveniently left out that, you know, he did it just to go where, you know, he thought he was needed the most, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know some, you know, some dudes who I would just catch them eating pork all the time. And, you know, since I grew up around in that, I would just take their flag from them, you know, and I'd be like, you false advocate, you can't be wearing this flag, I can't you be wearing this flag, you're getting a universal beatdown, and, you know, and it used to be crazy, because I used to catch dudes doing some crazy stuff. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You know? This was a crazy city to grow up in, you know. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people that do some crazy. Oof, God, some of the stuff that I've seen.
You don't even got to tell. My grandfather stayed on Blake off Blake and Dumont, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was so bad back in the 80s. Like, he wouldn't even let us come to see him. He'd be like, yo, I'll come meet you up there. He'd be like, I'll meet you up there. And it's sad because, and you know, when I talk to the people and I ask them about, you know, potential solutions, like, you know, because what people outside who grew up outside of New York City, like, you know, who grew up in, you know, areas, you know, in the South, and there's hoods everywhere, so I don't want to, there's hoods everywhere, but they just don't understand how concentrated the issue is. Like, there are areas in the city that basically have just basically been written off. Totally
mm-hmm.
written off. Like, you go to, like, the Browns, or you go to the Bronx. You know, if Harlem wasn't in Manhattan, it would have been done. But because it's in Manhattan, it's an accessibility issue, then, you know, they put some dollars in and developed it. But, I mean, what do you do? I mean, when you have people, like, I got my grandmother on my mother's side, right, that she's been in projects for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know several people who, there's generation upon generation projects. Like, you know, Condoleezza Rice was talking about this, that, you know, if you give me someone's zip code, I could tell you what kind of education they're going to get and what their chances are for the most part, which is very sad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I knew some folks. In fact, I'm gonna take a quick break, because once you said that, you made me start thinking about some folks growing up in New York. Shout to all the people growing up in New York. Shout to all those who have been striving for greater consciousness. We're gonna be back in a minute, Thomas.
Hey yo, every time I hear some real hip hop, man, I start thinking, yo, I'm still in love, man. Listen, I'm in the booth like prison, lit like this, it's music like women, I'm whipped like a nymph, I love to keep it pushing, like the bass and speakers, love hearing real hip hop and making heaters, born entertainer, armed with the flamer, if they bust shots when they come on, it's the banger, the place to lose it, who's taking to it, true gangsta music, true bass included, macho lingo, the beat will remind you of the quattro single or Cinco de Mayo. Turn the sound sky high, fly down the block, sound like a drive-by. Keep chicks moving, keep them open, put them in the mood and they leave something broken. DJ set the scene to it in the club, sound slack for the whole thing, music for the thugs. I told you, I'm still in love, baby. Beats drop heavy, every rhyme one ton. Street's not ready, Harry 911. Spock get frantic, too late to panic. The media, they can't stop from hitting the planet. Sodom and Gomorrah, Saddam and Osama. The horror, without the bomb and no llama. Sitting at a show performing, vocals are swarming. Flows are flowing like a global warming. I flood the market out, I'm over your head now. Roll a carpet out, the drought's over and dead now. When I kill a track, the two stories that cause the euphoria. The thrill is back, next flow level. Hip-hop lover, dress code ghetto, lip-hop cutter. Just the artist trying to rep the hardest and make history, so not even death can part us. Still in love, baby, still in love. Rock him, they know I get it. They pull me back, I'm going back. Spitting fire, ghetto music. Getting higher like a drug, therapeutic. Hooked like an addict, strong like sex. Look, I gotta have it, it alleviates stress. Quick as marijuana, settle in the brain. Needle hit the record like heroin to vein. Blood start flowing, adrenaline rush. Lost our doses, schoolyard crush. Raw still fiending. Still MCing, more deals than G'ing, bro still screaming. It's that dude, it's that stick, spit that dude, talk that shit. And wait till the lights go off, the show starts. That's when it's time for Raw to go off. I told you I'm still in love, always was.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, Black Talk.
Are you ready to get your mind right?
What's good, people? We're back. What's good, Thomas?
You know, there was a big kerfuffle recently with, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with Ron Fest out of Chicago, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so, you know, he made comments about that young dude, Chief Keef, you know, and it's like, you know, what he was saying was like the balance of what's being put out and how it feeds in the prison industrial complex and basically how, you know, Chief Keef is, you know, basically, you know, a representative of the most violent time in Chicago's history. I mean, Chicago mm-hmm. is one third the size of New York and got more murders. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And Chicago's always been a problem, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, the lack of balance, like, you know, back when I was growing up, you know, I mean, the number one, you know, Wise Intelligence was talking with the Nation of Islam, they was talking about this, like, you know, on the radio. You know, number one song on the radio at one point was Fight the Power.
Absolutely.
You know? And, you know, the fact that, you know, the racial, you know, self-esteem and all these different things, like, they talk about the parallels from the 60s and the early 90s. And late 80s, early 90s, and, you know, the difference in how we respond to certain situations and everything, and it's just striking, like, you know, it's just like, even like, you know, that whole quote-unquote golden era of hip-hop, like, you know, because, you know, once the Bad Boy era, you know, set in, it was like, you know, it's kind of rap, but, you know, I mean, you had to do, like, Shabazz and Disciple, right? Shabazz mm-hmm. and Disciple would talk about, you know, crime saga. But it wasn't glorifying it. He was talking about the consequences of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, living that life, you know. And that's what these kids are so desensitized from everything when it comes to violence, sex, any stimuli you can think of, they're totally desensitized. Like, there's young girls out there probably right now that probably sell themselves for less than a pair of sneakers.
Yep.
It means, like, sex means nothing to them. There's no... You know, it's, you know, that basically, that space between their legs is a cash register.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really, really sad. It's like, and that's in the show, and really what that show is perpetuating, they're talking about bigger dollar figures, but basically that's basically what the moral of the story is, you know? You know,
yeah.
I mean, even when you look at the other artist they got on there, what is her name? She's a rapper.
Who's it, Nicki Minaj?
No, the one on the show, she's married to her,
Rashida.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm boss bitch, I'm this, I'm that, and it's like, you know, I'm boss bitch? For real?
Yeah, and she's trying to put out a song called Marry Me. And she talking about whip it on you, make you want to marry
exactly.
me. And I looked at her project and I was like, first and foremost, when I looked at her husband, I felt really bad for the brother. You know, because
yeah.
he obviously is enamored with her.
Mm-hmm.
But she is an individual that wants to make it at all costs. And
mm-hmm.
from what she describes of herself, she says they have an 11-year-old son, and then she goes, and I'm a stepmother to 4 stepchildren, which obviously means these must be his children. So she makes a distinction. Don't you think I got 5 kids? I got one child. And she talks about it as when she speaks about the company, she calls it their company. But when she speaks about the music, she says, my album, my song. And it's not their song, their product, even though they're supposed to be a label and it's supposed to be about a family-run business. And he
he seems to take the business aspect of it seriously, supposedly because he's a music exec who's been successful in being able to have music and product placed in movies and other different things of that nature. So this shows his usefulness to her. But when he said, it might sound suckerish, but, you know, I bend over backwards for her. And, you know, when he said he bend over backwards, that resonated as a very suspicious phraseology to be using in Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly right.
And so it made me begin to look at and examine him differently with a different ruler. And I began to detect mannerisms in him that I began to question whether or not he was fully on the heterosexual team or not.
You know,
I don't know the brother's situation, so I don't want to speculate and say that he is something that he may not be. But I just began looking at and examining him deeper and recognizing that if he was participating in that sort of activity, it would make sense. Because individuals that do, oftentimes, don't have a problem with women being the boss bitch and things of that nature. You know, and their relationship is extremely dysfunctional. She showed up 2 hours or whatever late for her video shoot and said, I'm not feeling you. I got to be my own stylist. Well, if you're supposedly a label owner, then you recognize it is to your benefit to be your own stylist because that is one less person that you've got to pay out of your profit. So if you're thinking as a business person, then that wouldn't be an issue for you. But you want to be an artist and you want to be a label owner at the same time. And, you know, it's just very dysfunctional. And then for her to be a married woman talking about she wants to put out songs, marry me, and feet to the sky or whatever the hell it was, it's like she's pushing to women this whole mentality. And that doesn't appear to be her day-to-day reality. She talks about she's a married woman, a family woman, but she's, for the most part, looking to capitalize off of single women who desire to be married. You know, it just appeared to be dysfunctional to me when I looked at it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it shows a train wreck. I mean, I don't think you can, I mean, that, and that's not hyperbole. You know, the train wreck is probably an understatement. And so, and like I said, it's like, you know, and even if, like, for instance, if you tell someone, like, nah, I'm not into that, are you better than me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, people don't realize what they consume, whether it be what you consume food-wise or what you consume into your cerebral cortex as information. It can be even more so damaging than eating, you know, a bucket of fried chicken, you know, because this imagery that's being depicted is just horrible. And, you know, some people say, you know, that's dramatization, but there's people that let their children watch this foolishness.
Oh, it's a lot of people children watching this.
Yeah, I mean, young
children talk about this than I do adults.
And that means that, you know, people are letting the television raise their children. Yeah, and, I heard some
young boys, they're about 11 or 12 years old, and I heard them say, I'm about to Stevie J on that bitch.
No, they made a verb out of him?
Yeah, he's Stevie J has become a verb. I'm about to Stevie J on that bitch.
Oh, wow.
You know, young boys like, Don't make me get Stevie on you.
Wow. You know what was really, really sad to see? One of the things is, like, for instance, like, you know, there's an episode of the Boondocks where they show if Martin Luther King had actually, you know, lived and he was in a coma. Mm-hmm. And they show, like, you know, what a church looks like. And they got this song out with Meek Mill's and you could call Amen.
Mm-hmm.
20 years from now, that's going to be a church hymn.
Hmm.
I mean, for real. I mean, because it's got a nice gospel beat to it.
Mm-hmm.
25 years from now, someone's going to have that in their church. You know? I mean, that's just like, you know, it's like what's normal is abnormal, what's abnormal is normal. I'm not a Christian, but it's just the fact that, like, you know, like you start to see the perversion and the fact that we, you know, we accept it. You know, all these things are so perverse, but we accept it in terms of, you know, it's part of, you know, everyday living, you know. And it's, I also know, I wonder, you know, I've pondered this over and over again. And I said, you know, what is going to become of us in this country? You know?
Well, I would say that what's going to happen is there's got to be a sifting of the wheat from the tares. You know, when wheat and tares grow together, or the weeds, you know, one of the things is when wheat is growing, you've got to watch it because weed grows amongst the wheat. And if you're not observant, you'll let them grow together, and then when it comes time to harvest, it's very difficult to sift the wheat from the weeds or the tares, so that while they're growing, you've got to sift them and pull them apart and uproot those weeds. And I think that we're in the season in which we're going to have to differentiate ourselves from the weeds. And the weeds among us is the niggers and the bitches.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that there is a fundamental difference between a black man and a nigger, between a black woman and a bitch. I mean, it's not politically correct for us to say it out loud. You know, it's like when Chris Rock made the joke, who's more racist, white people or black people? And he goes, black people, because we hate niggers even more. And everyone did that uncomfortable laugh. But for those who don't identify themselves as niggers or subscribe to the nigger mentality, they knew exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who embrace the nigger mentality, they laughed, but they actually felt a sense of, oh, shit, I hope that don't catch on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A nigger's worst nightmare is that you're not a nigger like them. You know?
Yeah.
Which is why it's so important for them to constantly talk about how real they are. Which is why it was important for NWA to come out to offset the paradigm of what Public Enemy was doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Dr. Dre came out and pretty much emulated all the music that the Bomb Squad was doing and just niggerized it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why that Ice Cube first album was so successful, because Public Enemy then turned around and flipped the shit right back on them.
Mm-hmm.
We know what you did. We're going to flip it back on your ass. You know, and what it is that, you know, I think that it is important that we address and recognize the angst that we have within us as a people, that we have been oppressed, we have been subjugated, we have been humiliated, we have been exploited, all those things. We cannot deny those things. But we also have to recognize that among us, there are just some folks that are not going to make it. And it's not a comforting thought. Sometimes one of the people, some of the people that are not going to make it may live in your household.
Mm-hmm.
They live in your neighborhood. You may even call them mom or dad or son or daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Or honey. But that is a reality. And it's sad. It's hard to deal with. It's hard to accept. And whenever I hear people talk about, for instance, a sellout, what I recognized years ago, for me, what a sellout is a person who buys into the limitations of what society or other people place upon you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sellout. When somebody tells you you ain't shit,